Hello, I'm Ann Shea, and it's time for you to ask the mayor. Terre Haute Mayor Duke Bennett is here to answer questions about city issues which concern you. The phone number to call to speak with Mayor Bennett is toll-free, 877-285-9348. If you prefer, you may send an email to mayor@indiana.edu. Once again, the phone number is 877-285-9348, and the email is mayor@indiana.edu. Welcome, Mayor Duke Bennett. Thanks for being here.
No problem, ma'am.
Doing well. Weather's nice.
Yeah, perfect. It's great.
Well, why don't we just dive right into this? Want to talk about the applications for FEMA. They were actually due yesterday for those that were involved with the flood or were flood victims. Vigo County had more applications for assistance than any other county in Indiana. First off, why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I've talked to some other folks in other counties to kind of get an idea of what they faced and kind of what happened. And a lot of times I think it was more centralized or more consolidated where their flooding was. And here, once you got out into the county, just outside of the outskirts of Terre Haute, there were several large areas that were affected. And I just think that, you know, it just happens to be our terrain, our infrastructure, just kind of the way we're set up here, that a lot more people were affected than they were in some of the other communities that got just as much rain or in some cases even more rain. So I think it just happened to be just kind of the way it turned out here in Vigo County.
Okay. Is the city helping out in any other way for these victims right now?
Well, most of the city folks that we've been taking care of either through insurance or through their FEMA request and dealing with them as the city of Terre Haute government to help them clean up and those kinds of things. We've assisted the county with some of their stuff. They still have a much longer process for the county. But within the city of Terre Haute, our biggest need right now and our biggest concern is repairing the things that were damaged, the infrastructure-related things. And the individuals have pretty much been taken care of to the maximum that they're going to be able to get, government help with.
Any damage that is still apparent in the city, or has that pretty much been cleaned up?
Yeah, it's all been cleaned up, but the Thompson Ditch, which is a big part mm-hmm. of our, drainage system, sustained damage. You know, we had some sides that caved in, and it's not as deep as it used to be. It's settled, and we're going to have to spend some money to do that. And we've had to put our FEMA requests in, too, along with everybody else, to be reimbursed for all of our emergency services and fuel and resources, and then we're going to be putting in another request for these long-term repairs to the infrastructure.
And that brings us to our next topic that I want to talk about is the budget for the city. Obviously, this is a drain upon the budget as well, but many communities across the state are having to do some major cuts. First off, what is Terre Haute doing?
Well, all year we've tried to been prudent with our spending. We didn't know exactly how we were going to be affected with the new House Bill 1001 until a few months ago, where it really got nailed down as it worked its way through and they really crunched the numbers. So we've had estimates all along, and it appears that most of those estimates were accurate, that next year we're going to lose about $1.8 million in property tax revenues, and then in 2010, we're going to lose about another $3 million,
mm-hmm.
and those are permanent losses. So we've tried to do things this year to cut our expenses, and right now we're running about, we think we're going to finish the year about $1.5 million under the projected expenditures that was proposed for this year. So things like saving on gasoline, even though the gasoline prices went up, we put some things in place to restrict the use of gasoline for city employees. We've not done a few smaller projects that we had planned on doing. We've shoved them back into next year. We've cut back on some purchase of capital equipment. We have bought some things, but there were other things we're going to delay into next year or the following year. And then we've not filled some positions in the city that we're reevaluating some of those and kind of combining some things to make sure that the ones that we do fill are critical positions that we have to fill. So just trying to be prudent and smart with every expenditure that we have.
Okay, we have a question now from James. Go ahead, James.
Hello. My question is with regard to railroads and the problems they create for Terre Haute. I think, fairly or unfairly, the problems of the train traffic through Terre Haute get laid on the backs of local government. And you're stuck trying to deal with it, and you get all the blame when things go wrong with the railroad traffic. Could you update me on the progress in terms of dealing with this problem? And also, is there any better recourse that the public has besides complaining to local government? Who do we call? Who at the railroads can the public contact?
Yeah, you know, it's a continuous battle, and it has been for many, many years. And we're trying to develop a good relationship. We have two railroads that service Terre Haute, both CSX and Indiana Railroad. And I've had numerous meetings with both of those entities since I've taken office just to try to develop a relationship with them. The problem we have with CSX sometimes, they're so big and so spread out across the United States that it kind of gets, we get lost in the shuffle like everybody else. And whenever there's a crossing block, like 19th and Margaret's our biggest problem, our police officers ticket them when they sit there longer than what the ordinance allows them to be there for. And many times, in most cases, they don't pay their bills, they don't pay the ordinances, and we have to take them to court to deal with that. It's kind of a cost of doing business for them. So that's a bit frustrating. But then on the positive side today, we've been working with CSX to come and cut all their weeds down around all the railroad tracks. And just today, the crews arrived here in Terre Haute to cut all their grass and their weeds. So on one hand, we have some success, on the other hand, we don't. But to get back to your main point about what we do about railroads, yeah, it's not just a government problem to solve, but it kind of falls into our lap. And what I'm trying to do is push this community concept to begin to make improvements to the railroads and how they, you know, how their infrastructure is laid out in Terre Haute that will make it better for our residents. And so we want to do some incremental things, things we can afford, things we can get them to agree to work with, as long as if they don't work with us, it won't happen. And we're making a tremendous amount of progress. And soon we'll have some more public input and some public hearings where people will be able to hear our plans and what we're doing specifically. But we're really pushing it to make some quick incremental things over the next, you know, year, 2 years, 3 years, and then some longer-term things in the next, you know, 10 to 20 years that will really change the way the railroads operate through Terre Haute.
All right. Well, tell me more about the meeting with Senator Lugar's staff yesterday, staying on this topic. You're looking to secure more federal support to reduce the railroad crossings in the city?
Right. What we want to be able to do when I talk about the incrementalism, you know, it's important that you can't just go get a whole bunch of money. A lot of people want to talk about Lafayette, which is a great project. It took about 30 years and $30 million for them to do the things they wanted to do. You can't get big, giant bunches of money anymore through these earmarks, through the legislature, through the federal Congress. And so what we have to do is be able to have several things going on at the same time. We need to have specific projects that we're wanting funded, and along with doing additional planning and more long-term kinds of things. And so right now, Senator Lugar's office they've provided some funding to us to study the east-west CSX tracks that pass through Indiana State University. And so one of our primary focus points is to make sure that we spend that money correctly, get a good some ideas back and some planning on how we can make that better, and then prove to Congress that we are spending their money wisely and they're making a good investment in Terre Haute. So Lugar's folks wanted to come here and kind of see how it's progressing. They wanted to actually see all of our infrastructure related to railroads, mm-hmm. and it was a very, very good meeting to set us up for funding for next year's 2009 transportation budget.
Does it look good?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, it's going to be pretty competitive because every year there's fewer and fewer federal dollars that are flowing back to the community. So we got to make sure that we've got our act together and we've got everything going like we need to go so that they're confident that if they go to bat for us to get us an earmark, that we're successful to get it, and then we spend that money wisely.
Okay, we'd like to remind everyone, if you have a question for Mayor Duke Bennett of Terre Haute, you can either email us at mayor@indiana.edu or call us at 877-285-9348. Let's just stay on this topic a little bit more. Tell me about the efforts to relocate the Graham Grain Line, the railroad line. And for those who aren't familiar with it, what are the problems with this railroad line?
Well, there's a couple things. Over the past year or year and a half, there's been some discussion about making some improvements down there. Indiana Railroad and CSX are both involved in that portion. There's a line that runs kind of southeast across the south end of town that goes from Terre Haute Grain down there, Graham, that takes them out to the CSX north-south track to be able to move their grain in and out of Terre Haute. And so the tracks are not in that good a condition, and they're across U.S. 41 and several other crossings. And where it really comes into play is Margaret Avenue, where it crosses mm-hmm. Margaret Avenue. Beginning next April, we're going to be doing a four-lane expansion of Margaret Avenue. And it'll be from 3rd Street to roughly 8th Street, which encompasses that 7th and Margaret, where the railroad comes at an angle across there. it'll cost the city about $2 million to build railroad crossings there. We'd rather see that money go towards relocating that railroad in that end of town and not have to have crossings. And so we'd be able to eliminate about 9 crossings by taking that line out and rerouting them over an existing line that runs just a few blocks north of there that runs east and west, and it'll get them over to the same point where they need to go through the Indiana Railroad. So it cleans up crossings, reduces from a safety perspective, it's good. From a financial perspective, it's good for the community. And it just makes perfect sense for that to be kind of a phase one approach to improving the railroads in town. And the money that's required for that would be coming from us locally here. There's no separate federal money from anybody to make that happen. It would just, once again, help us to show Congress that we're acting and doing things here locally to make it happen, so they'll fund us for future projects similar to that.
I know there was always a problem with that line also across 41. Would that mm-hmm. be eliminated as well?
Yeah, it would be. It would turn into one crossing. There's a crossing just right by Apple House and Goodwill there, just a few blocks south, and then you got the angle one there at Voorhees for the serves the Graham Grain area. And so that would be consolidated into one crossing that would be an upgraded crossing on 3rd Street. So instead of having two, we'd have one.
Okay, well, let's go back to the budget a little bit as we're still talking about money. One of the things that you all did was that you cut down on mowing grass in the parks. Well, Vigo County did. Are those little things also that you're looking at cost cutters for the budget?
Well, we've tried to do some things like that. You know, we really want our parks to look good, and I'm not saying that they would look horrible. That was the county's decision to go and spread it out a little bit. But their parks are more rural anyway. Our parks being in a city, we have some, you know, some standards that we expect residents and homeowners to, you know, be within code. And we want to make sure our parks look good and they're cut. What we've had to do is just cut back a little bit on some other things, you know, the numbers of people that are cutting them. So maybe we do actually don't get them cut every week. Maybe it's more like a week and a half, but it's because we have, you know, not as many staff, or we haven't bought new equipment, and so we're using existing equipment. Just so we're trying to keep it looking good, but we're not spending any extra money to get that done.
I understand. Okay, I want to remind everybody to give us a call if you would like to ask Mayor Duke Bennett a question, 877-285-9348, or email mayor@indiana.edu. Let's go to another topic. There's a serious problem going on right now with copper wire thefts. Thieves are just stealing and cutting copper ground wires from utility poles and such. This is a real problem, not just in Terre Haute, but across the state. What is happening here, Mayor?
Well, you know, we've talked about this several times here internally, just to, you know, I think what the biggest thing that's going on is, you know, people are facing some hard times out there, and this is a way for them to, you know, supplement their income, which is very unfortunate for all of us, that's the kind of, the economy, the drug use, those kinds of things just make people do things they, you know, they shouldn't be doing. And this is a very dangerous kind of a thing, let alone it's a real burden on the homeowner because there's been houses where people are remodeling and they go away one day and they come back the next and somebody's got in there and stripped all their wiring out. Mm-hmm. It's very expensive for them, and the insurance claim process, we're all paying more and more for this. And what's hard is, you know, these people are doing it at night when nobody can see them, but it's very dangerous. You know, somebody's going to end up being killed here by trying to steal some Duke Energy wire, or they're going to break into somebody's house who's, you know, going to defend their property. And that's what I'm afraid of, is this kind of brazen kind of activity is really going to result in somebody getting hurt. And so what we've tried to do is just some more behind-the-scenes kind of stuff with surveillance and making regular visits to our local scrap yards and making contact with other nearby scrap yards to try to identify who these folks are that are doing this and be able to kind of get them from that perspective. We need neighbors to be, know what's going on in your neighborhood. Make sure you know if somebody's in a house that's not supposed to be, and call the police, and we'll come and check it out. We get lots of calls like that, but it's still happening. So people need to help us and be the eyes and the ears in the community, and we'll put these people, you know, we'll catch them, and we'll take them through the legal system, because it's just a very unfortunate and a very bad thing for all communities. This is a nationwide problem, and we're just seeing a lot of it here, too.
A lot of people who aren't familiar with this are asking, what are they using it for?
Well, they just take it down and cash it in. You know, any kind of metal, you can go And so people are out scrapping all kinds of stuff. They're going through trash cans and pulling out metal things, and they go and steal copper wire and any other kind of metal they can find. So they rounded a bunch of it up and drive it down to these scrap yards and sell it as scrap metal and, you know, and get some money for it. So that's kind of, it just falls into that pile of just, you know, it has a value to it, and that's what they're seeking.
Okay. A larger issue that goes along with this are the number of empty homes. You know, it's not just in Terre Haute. It's across the nation. It's across Indiana. But the number of homes just sitting empty because of foreclosure and that kind of thing, they are targets too as well, right?
Right, absolutely. And, you know, it's not just that, but it's other illegal activity. You know, people are getting in there and doing things they shouldn't be doing. Sometimes it's just kids, but it's adults, too. And, you know, the city has properties they take over, and we get them torn down just as fast as we can with what money allows and what, you know, what the courts. You're kind of at the mercy of the courts to go through that process to bring closure to it. But there are a lot of people. And what I'm worried about, too, is, you know, there's a lot of folks that have lost their homes to flooding, and at some point, some of these people just may decide to just, you know, leave town. I mean, or move somewhere else, and their house is going to be sitting vacant like that also. And you know, there's a lot of them out there right now, and we're doing our best within the city of Terre Haute to make sure that we're identifying these. Our code enforcement officers are out, and they get the status of them, where it's at in the court system, and condemning them as needed and doing what we need to do. But it is a problem, and you're right, it's a problem everywhere, but even here in Terre Haute, we're feeling that on a daily basis.
It's a vicious circle when you have homes like that are sitting empty and then lowering property values of other homes that are sitting next to them. How many of these homes, I mean, are you condemning or taking down or taking action with?
Well, usually in any given year, we tear down anywhere from 20 to 30, 35 homes. So those are houses that have been condemned or we bought through a tax sale. Because they're adjacent to property the city might already own that we think, you know, we can get developed through our Department of Redevelopment, or just other. There's been just recently a homeowner basically donated their property to the city, and you know, we've cleaned it up and taken care of it because it was a very good location that right next to three lots that the city already owned, and then we hope to turn around and then sell those four lots to someone who will put something on there that will generate some property tax revenue and put somebody in a newer home. So part of it is we've got an old housing stock here in this community, and you've got people that are going through tough economic times, and you've got some that just the city inherits because of the condemnation process where they just people haven't kept them up. And so in all that mix, you end up with a lot of homes. And so it's better to get them torn down and get the property back on the market. So that's what we try to do versus, you know, people set them on fire. And just you can just imagine all the vandalism and things that occur with an empty house. So we work as hard as we can to get that to the point of getting it either occupied again or, you know, getting it torn down if that's what's needed.
Okay. Well, we would love to have you join this conversation with Terre Haute Mayor Duke Bennett. And you can call us at 877-285-9348 or email us at mayor@indiana.edu. I'd like to get your take on the destruction of VX at the Newport Chemical Depot. They just finished this practically yesterday, I think. And I know that Terre Haute was always in on the discussions about its storage there. How do you think this changes the landscape of the community?
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. They've employed so many people for so long, and a lot of Terre Haute people have worked up there in a variety of capacities. And you know, we're going to be losing some jobs through that. And everybody kind of knew that was coming. And what happens next will be the key. That's an awful lot of property that, you know, it's up in Vermilion County, just north of Terre Haute here, and just a few miles away. But, you know, it's a very, there's a lot of potential with that property as an industrial type of park or any other kind of development. I mean, there's a ton of acreage up there, and it's usable property. And so it'll be very interesting to see how the U.S. government decommissions that property and the Vermilion County is able to get involved with the planning there. So, you know, it's just more of a long-term thing, though. You know, we'll lose the jobs in the short term that have been up there, but over the long haul, I'm hoping and confident that some things will happen that will generate some new jobs for people.
Beyond jobs, do you think it changes the feeling around, you know, those communities in terms of it not being there anymore?
Sure. Oh, I'm sure. You know, it's always been it's been a military-type base. It's always been something that a lot of people were kind of afraid of because of, you know, the threat of something going wrong. I think there's probably over time it's become less sensitive as they've been destroying it and nothing's really happened. I mean, there hasn't been any big issues with that. And I'm sure there's a sense of confidence now that, okay, all that stuff's finally been destroyed and being taken care of, that, you know, it's closure is finally here. I mean, it's been a long, drawn-out process, and I think people have just been gearing up for it, and now it's actually arrived. So, you know, I think it's just one of those things that we've gone through. It's a pretty unique thing that many communities don't go through.
Okay. Well, we have an email question from John. Okay. He says that hate crimes are a concern in the Terre Haute area. Do you support the hate crime law introduced in 2007 and 2008 by Representative Greg Porter? And how well are Terre Haute police complying with the law passed in 2000 requiring the collection and reporting of hate crimes?
Well, you know, we're following all those guidelines that we need to follow and all those rules to report that kind of stuff. You know, hate crimes are just, it's a pretty pathetic thing. I mean, it's really sad that when people want to single people out for whatever reason and commit a crime against them for that kind of a thing. And we've got all kinds of laws and things in place, and we've just got to enforce them. We've got to do what we got to do. And, you know, and I support any efforts to, you know, clarify that or make it clearer and give the prosecutor's office and judges more leeway to do things to be able to deal with these kind of situations. You know, we do our job as the city to the best of our ability. Sometimes it's difficult to, you know, prove certain people did certain things, and that's where it gets really tricky in these kinds of incidents. You know, recently we had a church that a swastika was painted on the steps. Well, without any witnesses or anything, it's really difficult. But what that does is it puts us on awareness that this kind of stuff's happening, and somebody out there knows something. So it's more of an intelligence gathering thing that we go through. And then when we find somebody, we will prosecute them. You know, we will file the charges against them, and then the prosecutor, we will expect them to carry that on out to punish those people for those activities. So, you know, I'm supportive of anything that makes it a better community, makes us a better environment. We just got to make sure that whatever laws or things they create are things that we can definitely enforce, and then the courts can, you know, carry it on out so the sentencing is appropriate.
Okay, great. Well, we have a phone call, a question from Bob. Bob?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Mayor Burke, Mayor Bennett. Uh-huh. I have been concerned about the striping, that is the repainting of intersections around town.
Uh-huh.
And there are some that are really like an accident waiting to happen because of lack of direction. For anyone out of town who is not familiar with the lefts and the rights and the straight aheads, it could really be a problem. And I was wondering if something could be done. I don't think we've had any striping for quite a while at many, many intersections. So that's just something, and I thought I'd ask you about.
Sure. No, that's a very valid question. You know, we do striping on the city streets, and, of course, the state does the striping on all the state highways, which is, you know, Wabash, Ohio, Cherry, 3rd Street, Poplar Street. All those are state highways, and they're responsible for those, and that's where most of the striping is. But we're working with NDOT to get that done. They haven't not done much striping here. Then the ones that we're responsible for, we do have a little bit less striping, per se, with turns and those kinds of things. Our street department has been swamped with tree removal and things related to the flood this year, and so we are running behind. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest with you. We just started yesterday with paving. Typically, we get started much earlier, but paving just started, and we're going to do about $1.2 million worth of paving of city streets that, like I said, just started yesterday. And then once those are done, of course, those will be striped. And then we're going to be striping the other streets that we're not paving this year between now and the fall. So we're basically running a couple of months behind, and I apologize for that. But it's been a tough summer. We've got 35 people on the street department. It's a reduced force from what it was several years ago. And we have been spending most of our time doing limb and tree pickup and disposal of waste from the flooding. And we just need to get caught up, and we will be doing that.
All right. Thank you so much, Bob. Let's go to a slightly lighter topic, a Colts camp going on right now in Terre Haute at Rose Holman. How has that been going for the city in terms of economic growth?
Well, you know, I've been living in a hotel recently because I had a fire at my house. And so,
yes.
And it's been interesting because I've been really watching. It's been a really neat experience in some ways to watch the people coming in and out of Terre Haute staying in the hotels that are down there where I'm at. And there's been a lot of Colts fans coming in. And I see them, you know, they're dressed up and you know where they're going when they're coming and going. And every day there's new people that come over and they spend the night or we see them at the restaurants or whatever. You know, it's going very well. They draw a good crowd out there. They really do. You know, pro football is it's one of, you know, America's biggest pastimes, and the Colts are very successful. The fans around here are very passionate, and people are traveling from all over Indiana and other places to come to camp. So attendance is good, and just the passion is there, and I think people are a little disappointed that Peyton Manning's injured, but, you know,
yeah,
they're still coming, and it's been going very, very well. I've been out there a couple of times. I really haven't been able to watch a whole practice, but just kind of observed, and people are, you know, it's going very well. We're very fortunate to have them in Terre Haute.
What are the discussions going on to try to keep them in Terre Haute?
Well, you know, it's mainly between the Colts and Rose Holman, of course. It's an agreement between those two. But what we've tried to do is support everybody in this process. We want to keep them here. I mean, it is a huge benefit, and they're so close to Indianapolis, yet they're just far enough away that it's good for them. The facilities are phenomenal. So, you know, I think that, as you've seen, as they've renewed these contracts, I think they kind of look around and find out this is the best deal. You know, it's been a great deal, and we want to keep ourselves competitive that way, that they keep looking at us that way and stay here for indefinitely.
Okay. Now, I wanted to go over one last thing with you. I know that the city doesn't really deal with the FSSA system. I know that's on the state level. But there are things that are happening around the Terre Haute area and Vigo County area to help people understand the changes in FSSA. Is that correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay. One of them said at Ivy Tech. Is that right? On Friday?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. And if people have questions, is your office able to direct them where they need to go?
Well, yeah, I mean, if people have questions really about anything related to that, I mean, we kind of become a clearinghouse for a lot of stuff. And whenever people read things in the paper or you hear there's an announcement coming, people should always feel comfortable to call us. You know, a lot of times we don't have any direct connection, just like this one,
mm-hmm.
but we can sure point them in the right direction. We've got phone numbers and contacts, and we can email people for you. But to try to be able to help our, you know, the citizens of this community to get plugged in and get the right information. So, you know, anytime they make changes like that, it's always complicated and it's hard to communicate. So if there's anything we can do to help clear that up, we will. Typically, we'll point you in the right direction of the person who can answer your question. So that's kind of our role with those types of changes.
Okay, I want to give everybody that information that Friday's open house will be at Ivy Tech's main Wabash Valley campus, and it's open to clients or applicants for temporary assistance for needy families, food stamps, Hoosier HealthWise, Medicaid, and HIP, the Healthy Indiana Plan. So that's available for everyone right then. In terms of one last thing, the park system, you said that you're still keeping the mowing, the grass, and the parks and everything like that. It has been decided on whether alcohol will be allowed at parks. Is that correct in Terre Haute?
Well, the ordinance that was passed by the city council was to allow the park board to permit individual groups, like a festival or something, at Fairbanks Park only. So that's our park by the river, just south of downtown here. And so if somebody wanted to have an event with alcohol, they could petition to have, you know, a permit for an event at that park only. So it's not all the parks. It's just one park, and it's just per type of event. So we haven't had any yet, you know, and I'm sure at some point that will happen. Our role as the city, you know, I was not supportive of that, but they passed it. So, you know, we'll work with that, and we'll make sure that we have the proper police presence and the proper, you know, facilities and fencing and everything we need to do down there, and we'll support everything the park board's doing to make sure that we're protected.
All right. Thank you so much, Mayor Duke Bennett. And this has been Ask the Mayor with Terre Haute Mayor Duke Bennett. I'm Ann Shea. Join us again next week with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan. Production support for Ask the Mayor comes from the South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lappin Real Estate. For producer Colin Bishop and engineer Michael Pashkesh, I'm Ann Shea, and thanks for listening.